This is Thomas with 3-7 Ventures. I want to invite you to the fight against human trafficking. Join this fight alongside our friends at Fight Coffee, an organization that puts 100% of its profits into stopping the traffic of human beings. Join the fight by joining them. Order your coffee from Fight Coffee. Go to fightcoffee.org now.
Welcome to the 3-7 Podcast, brought to you by 3-7 Consulting. This is a show where you'll hear conversations about business, strategic alliance and partnership management, leadership growth, and more. Specifically, you'll get three takeaways from our three hosts every 7 days. Thanks for listening.
Welcome to the 3-7 People Leadership Podcast, where being a frontline manager is honorable and mastering your craft is a duty. Today's topic is accountability. Could be one of the most talked about, written about subjects of all time. With me is my co-host, Chris Carls.
Yeah, it's going to be a great topic. I'm looking forward to it.
So I was doing a little bit of research on this. I was surprised how much was written about out there. You can throw a dart and you can find 20 articles on accountability. Clearly, this is something that is a need and a challenge.
I was going to say, does that mean because so many people are accountable or because so many people struggle with it?
I think so many managers wish that they had accountable organizations. Yeah. Have you seen this thing, this accountability ladder thing?
No, tell me more.
Okay, so I had not seen the accountability ladder. And part of it was kind of cool because it was an explanation. But I started thinking about the uses and it got kind of scary. It was basically stages of accountability 1 to 8. So accountability level 1 is sort of, it's someone else's fault. Accountability level 2 is like the dog ate my homework. And it goes all the way up to accountability level 8, which is basically, I actually solve problems.
Yeah, I love that. Something I used to do with my teams is when they particularly struggle with accountability, I would always ask people, no matter why the problem happened, you know, assuming we're talking about something that went wrong, I want you to come in here and find a way to own it. Just to get those muscles working. And then to be like, trust me, I'm going to have the same conversation with everybody involved. And you have to trust me that I'm going to get to the bottom of what really happened. But I want you to connect the dots for how you own this outcome. And if the story is preposterous, well, it'll be obvious in the way that you explain the story.
Right. No, I love connecting the dots. I'm just laughing a little bit at the idea of telling somebody, having to explain to them, you're coming to me with accountability level 1. versus accountability level 8. It was interesting. You know, why do you think this, why is this subject so hard?
Yeah, because our natural tendency is to think about all of the reasons why it's not our fault. I mean, I don't know about you, but my mind goes there right away, and it's a trained skill to step back and say, okay, is that true? And I still fall victim to it every day. And I think an interesting concept is to think about where you are more accountable and who you're more accountable with. And so, for example, I'm incredibly accountable in the workplace because I've trained those muscles. I struggle with being accountable with my wife.
Mm. Yeah, you know, it's funny. I think sometimes it is that level of intentionality. It's the level of intentionality for us in our own accountability, but it's also the level of intentionality as we think about that with our employees. Mm. There's sort of this sense of, I said to do it, I'm the manager, they should do it. And we'll get into that later as we continue to talk about authenticity and, you know, we talk about, you know, the idea of coaching and what that looks like. You know, I was thinking through this example with George Washington, and I don't have all the details right. Some history buffs can fact check me. But there's this historical fact where there was a group of people who had basically walked away from the war effort, and so was treason. And so George Washington, you know, basically put all of them on the gallows, and then only chose, I think he only hung one guy. But it was the mindset of, okay, if someone, I told you to do this, if you don't do what I say, then there's a punishment or then there's implications. And, you know, maybe not the best way of self-motivating your employees, and maybe not the, there might not, if we all employed that methodology, that might not get you to the ultimate outcome of having a absolutely accountable culture.
All right. Well, as long as we're on the thread of you know, halfway accurate history lessons. I wanted to bring up this. I'd heard something about Steve Young when he was getting inducted into the Hall of Fame. And I think this speaks to why accountability is important. So before we get into the logistics of how you hold people accountable, I like to think about what's the benefit, right? And one of the things that Steve Young had said, more or less, was, you know, I couldn't see my receivers, but they did what they needed to do. And now I'm here being inducted into the Hall of Fame. And it's just this notion of when we all execute the way we need to, so much more is possible.
Yeah. So it's interesting there because he's talking about them having accountability. Are you a 49ers fan?
Well, I was born in the Bay Area. Unfortunately, to my family, I'm now a Seahawks fan.
Right. So, okay, same thing for us. You know, grew up with 49ers jammies and 49ers poster, and, you know, you must love the 49ers. But so, huge Steve Young fan. I had the chance to hear him talk. And he shared the story a little bit differently. He was sharing the story of having that same challenge. I couldn't see my receivers. And trying to come into the environment that Joe Montana had just left. And having the conversation with Jerry Rice. Mm. And basically it was, hey, Jerry, I can't see you. So I know you're going to want that ball kind of right in the numbers. But it might be a little bit high. It might be a little bit low. And he said, Jerry just looked at him and just said, hey, Steve, how about you just put it right here in the numbers? In other words, I understand all of your reasons, but at the end of the day, if we're going to win, then I need you to be accountable to go and take that. So it's fascinating to hear him frame that a different way, right? Which is he took that lesson from Jerry and then, you know, he was appreciating when his receivers had that same level of accountability.
Right. And so that story reminds me of this. We've probably all heard it at one point or another, but there's this concept of how you move people from renters to owners, how you move somebody from filling a spot to actually embracing the long-term objectives and the outcomes. And so that example there, that's the two of them both being owners. Like, we need to get to the finish line. I know what my role is, but just the fact that Steve Young's asking Jerry Rice and having this conversation, he's going like, I need to achieve this outcome. I own this. And so how do I get there? And I love that Jerry Rice pushed back on him, because in the real world, we all have to be able to carry our weight and we all have to be able to perform our jobs.
Right. And what's, I think it's so interesting is there was a quote by Ann Lohr, and it was this idea that, you know, 93% of organizations are trying to drive accountability, but only 85% of the people aren't able to identify how their work aligns to those end goals or objectives. So how can I even be accountable when I don't even know how my work aligns to that end goal?
Yeah, and I think therein is one of the key takeaways for accountability. It's one of the earliest lessons that I was taught. It was the first thing I heard. I'm not sure I've fully learned it yet, but there's this idea that if you want to hold people accountable, if you expect accountability, you have to have clear instruction on what's expected and what's required.
Right. I think a lot of people would be surprised that their employees don't know what they should be accountable for.
Yeah. No, I agree.
And there's a lot of details in that. Do I know? You know, do I clearly understand the nuances of my role? Do I understand what it means to progress in knowing how I do my role at a more deep, at a deeper level? And then with all of our biases around strengths and how we think and how we have like a different approach to the role, do I understand what that means in terms of accountability for the thing that I've been asked to do?
Right. I don't want to keep pulling it back, but if I think the homeowner analogy, the first time I bought a house, all these expenses kept occurring. Like, we got a leak in our living room because I hadn't been swiping the brush off the roof. And our garage door broke because I hadn't been taking care of the spring mechanism at the top. And part of me is like, well, how am I supposed to know all of these things? And then the other part's like, well, unless I go figure out how to maintain my house, I'm going to keep having unexpected expenses.
Right. Well, I guess that brings us to the next point, which is, you know, are you in a place where, you know, as employees, they take, they accept that.
Mm-hmm.
And That could be a real challenge to you, right? I do understand the role, and I don't want to do it. It's not how I think it should be done. So for you, Chris, when you run into that as a challenge, how have you addressed that?
Well, we've spoken on some of our prior podcasts about being purpose-driven and authentic, and I think that all leads into the sense of accountability, which is, yeah, if you don't want to be an owner, if you don't believe in why you're here and what we're trying to accomplish, I'm sorry, but there's not a lot of fixing that problem. You have to go back to the root, and people have to be bought into what you're trying to accomplish and why you're trying to accomplish it. And then when you have clear expectations, then accountability comes hand in hand with a good employee.
Right. So part of accepting is care.
Yes, absolutely.
Yes, there was a Gallup poll that said that companies with highly engaged employees outperform their competitors and are 21% more profitable. Just, it proves with science, right? Mm-hmm. If I care and I'm engaged, and because of that, now I am embracing accountability. I'm taking that accountability on. Now we're actually going to be able to see that in the bottom line.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, we often used to talk in my old business about, is it a people problem or a process problem? And it's so easy to call things people problems. But if you have a team of passionate people that care about what you're doing, it's rarely that. It's oftentimes something in the process, something in the communication, something in the clarity of expectations contributed to the lack of accountability.
Right. So if I'm a frontline leader, what are the practical things I can do to go and build that kind of organization?
Oh, shoot. I think one of the easiest things to do immediately is to always ensure that there is a clear who, what, and when for any action. One of the things I'd heard is, if it's important enough to ask somebody to do it, it's important enough to define when it needs to be done and what it is that needs to be done.
Right. So by practicing that in every meeting as things come up, you just start to demonstrate a culture of accountability that we're not going to talk about things that we're not going to do. We're not going to waste energy saying we should do that, unless we're going to be in a place where we're going to assign somebody to go take that action.
Yeah, absolutely agree.
This idea of defining and measuring is something that I have gotten way more convicted about over the course of the last couple of years. And what I've seen is this, when you can be in a place where you can clearly articulate what someone should be doing now, but you can also articulate mastery, you can drive that accountability conversation much more clearly. Mm-hmm. And I remember when I first took a role in partnerships and I started talking about, like you need to own the relationship, you need to figure out what you're going to go launch, and you need to figure out how you're going to go execute and land it. And it was a good set of general principles to try and align simplicity to the role. Mm-hmm. But we didn't do the employees the service of actually taking that to the next level to say, what does it mean to own a relationship? And in that, there's not really accountability. What does it mean to own the relationship? I know the person. I call them, they answer the phone. But that doesn't have anything to do with being, the degree of trust. It doesn't have anything to do with understanding motivations. Mm-hmm. It doesn't have anything to do with influence. And so this idea of being in a place where you can clearly define, what does it mean to do the role today? What does it mean to progress in how you do that role? And then be in a place where you can actually help someone see how you would measure that really starts to bring that function that you're trying to live out to life.
Right. Because when you clearly define what success looks like and you clarify upfront how you're going to measure it, you provide people with the guideposts that they need to be effective.
Right. So that brings us to this next one. And there's just stats everywhere. So we're talking about a lot of stats today, but that's because there's stats everywhere on accountability. So from the Gallup poll, 48% of employees that they surveyed got feedback a few or less than a few times a year. And only 26% of those people said that feedback made me better. Second statistic from Partners in Leadership, workplace and accountability study. Apparently that was a really big study that was done. But I think practical insight here that 50% of the managers disliked talking about accountability because they didn't know how to implement it. And so I think this last item here is around coaching. And what you can see from that is people don't really want to give good feedback, and people don't really want to hold people accountable because it's painful and hard. And part of the reason it's hard is that it can really be the point of conflict between a manager and an employee. And the only way to push past that is by being willing to dig in and coach. So, Chris, what have been some of the things that have worked for you as you've had to dig in and coach people to accountability?
So the first part is understanding that my responsibility to do that, because that helps you overcome the discomfort. And so there's a quote I wanted to share from a guy named Michael Kanick. He said, "Don't cheat your people out of the opportunity to win because of your discomfort holding people accountable." And that's just a reality that it is uncomfortable to hold people accountable, but it's really uncomfortable when you didn't set clear expectations up front. And so the first trick is to always be clear on what the expectations are, to do the who, what, when that we talked about earlier, to be clear on what the expected result is. And then when it's really important, you ask people to repeat back to you, to paraphrase what they heard, and see if what they interpreted matches what you intended.
I think this is one of those, you have to decide as a manager, how much integrity do you really have? And do you really care more about your people than you care about yourself? There's a lot of managers out there that just hide. And I'm not going to give them the feedback. I'm going to wait to give them the hard feedback until after I collect my morale survey. I'm going to wait and save this nugget so that I can explain the rewards I'm giving them, which is all might make your job easier as a manager. But it all lacks the integrity of saying, I am going to have a hard conversation if the hard conversation is in the best interest of the employee, regardless of whether or not it makes me feel uncomfortable or makes my job more difficult. And so I think for a lot of us, those are hard things, but you really do have to make that decision.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a saying that says, own it up and train it down. There's probably a number of variations of that, but there's this idea that, yeah, when my team fails, I failed them. And so when I own it up, I'm not just taking one for the team and putting them on a good show that I'm going to take responsibility for my team's failure. And frankly, when people do that, it's evident that that's what they're doing. You have to sincerely understand that when your team failed, with the rare exceptions of some bad behaviors where they don't belong on the team, it's because you as a leader failed your team in providing clear expectations and providing effective training on how to do it, and providing some context on how important the objective was. I mean, take your pick, but genuinely owning your responsibility is the key to leading by example and demonstrating to your team what accountability looks like.
And I think that leads us into the key takeaways. The top one for me here is that this might be the greatest thing that a manager can control. You have incredible control over how your team built a culture of accountability and how you coach people to it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say one I'd like to add is know who you're accountable to and ensure that people always know who they're accountable to. Because when you put a face to the task, at the very least, I have a person I can follow up with when I feel like I'm going to miss my mark. But your sense of ownership increases significantly when you know who you're accountable to.
This one is really, really important. And I think that it's even more important when you're in this new remote environment.
Yeah, good point.
Face to face, when you're there, I'm looking at you, you're looking at me, you know, and I can see clearly that I didn't hand you the baton, and so you lost the race, or, you know, I didn't get you what you needed for the client, and you didn't have as good of a meeting, and we're there together side by side. That feels so different from, well, this is our part. We're the good guys. That's the other part of the team, you know, and you can actually go to war.
Right.
And it's really, really hard to go to war with people that you're close to and connected to. So as leaders, putting a face to that, if you can, get together face to face. If not, making it really, really clear for our teams, the dependencies between the two and what does it matter?
Yeah. And then the last one I just tack on is, it's super tactical, but it's a who, what, when to every action. You know, drive that behavior in meetings. you don't just record actions, you record who's going to do them, what the action is, and when it's going to be done. And ideally, you're getting people to volunteer those things. So it's me saying, I've got that action, it'll be done by Friday at 3, not somebody assigning it to them as they take minutes for the meeting.
I love that. So as you push for the clarity on that and you build a culture around that, people start to embrace the culture and start to step up to say, hey, I'm creating my action plan for the week.
Right. So if you like anything you've heard here, we really encourage you to help build this tribe, share it on LinkedIn, follow this podcast, and just be a part of our community. We'd love to hear from you.
Thank you for listening to the 3-7 Podcast, brought to you by 3-7 Consulting. If you haven't already, be sure to subscribe so you don't miss another episode. And we'd love to connect. Give us a follow on LinkedIn and learn more about what we do at 37consulting.com. That's the number 3, SEVEN consulting.com. We'll see you next time.